Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sometimes the world looks like you ain't ever seen it before. Stuck behind never-ending windows, all you need is a door. Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remember, in unusual times, it can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Just ask, say the word and I'll be there. Just ask, you know the greatest things in life all come in a pair. They say hindsight's 20/20, but that ain't far enough. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows taught me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Are you ready to slay another day? So are we. Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. I'm Jess Sterling, here with my co-host, Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Hey, Jess. I'm literally horrible.
Oh my God. Why?
Because I have a phobia. And
the puppets?
Well, kind of. It's puppet adjacent. Like, ever since I was a little kid, I was really deathly afraid of Pinocchio.
Like, oh, I forgot about this. You did tell me this. I knew this about you.
Yeah, I it's one of those things, like, the movie is, like, probably just, like, not for children anyway. And I, like, right. I was a very scared child. Like, I was pretty much afraid of everything. There was this one time where, like, we were watching Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in preschool, and they literally had to put me in another room because I was inconsolable. And one of the, besides Willy Wonka, another one of my trigger movies was Pinocchio. So, like, like Buffy, I've always been wigged out by puppets. Mm-hmm. And, like, ventriloquy, the art of ventriloquists are fucked. And I hate them, actually, a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was a roller coaster watching this show, because for the first 40 minutes of this episode, I was screaming like I was in a haunted house, like literal screaming. Like, my partner Adam can attest to this, because I was horrified. And then, like, it got weird in a direction I did not expect it to go. It's just all 100% fucked. And, like, I'm so glad that we have the king of horror with us, like the guy, like, if we have to talk about the scariest movies and shows in the world, that is this episode of Buffy. I'm glad that Todd the librarian's here with us today.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, I'm just sitting here laughing at y'all describing this, like, the scariest episode of Buffy.
It's so scary.
There were jump scares, and I think the worst part, honestly, was, like, the puppet's eyebrows.
No, like, that's not what it was. It was when he was scurrying the fuck about.
Oh, that was awful.
I can't.
The little tippy taps on the floor of, like,
no, 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 no. No, I hated it. I hate the tippy taps. Oh my god, I hate it. And he just scurried about. Oh
yeah. Well, the wild.
Oh, and him in the window.
Like you said, Sarah, like the twistiness of this, of like him not even ultimately being like the baddie, right? Like Buffy got me yet again. I was like, this is obviously the baddie, the horrifying puppet. But Todd, as per Sarah's introduction, you love horror, you love scary things. Obviously, Sarah and I think are in agreement that this is the scariest episode of Buffy thus far. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be scary things to come. But tell us, because this is the first time you've come on our Buffy podcast, tell us a little bit about your history with Buffy and why you chose this episode.
So surprisingly, I was not a day one Buffy watcher. You might think that I was going to be all
surprising.
Part of it was timing. This came out during my junior or senior year of college. And mm-hmm. I was not a huge TV watcher just because of everything else going on at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And when this came out, I'll admit I wasn't jazzed to watch it because I'd seen the movie. And I've grown to appreciate the movie over the years, but the movie, whenever I first saw it, it wasn't what I wanted it to be. You know, I had an idea of what I thought the Buffy the Vampire Slayer was going to be, and the movie wasn't it. So if there's a TV series, I'm like, well, I didn't really care for the movie. I don't know if I really care about the TV show. But then my roommate's girlfriend's like, you need to watch it. You need to give it a try. I think you'll really like it. I think it's right up your alley. And I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. So I didn't see any Buffy until I caught the tail end of I, Robot, You, Jane. That was the first episode I saw anything of.
The episodes.
Well, it's because he got plugged in.
I was going to say you got jacked in.
Yeah, I got jacked in the episode. So the reason I picked this episode was because actually I wanted I, Robot, You, Jane, but Wiggler snagged that from me.
Yeah.
But the reason I picked this episode was this was the first episode that I saw fully. This is like the first full episode of Buffy that I ever watched. So that's kind of why I put it on as my pick.
Okay.
But I watched it. I started watching it. I watched all the reruns of season one to get caught up before season two. I bought the DVDs. I watched every time a new season would come up. I'd rewatch the previous seasons leading up to the new season. I listened to the commentary. I'm not going to say I was the most obsessed Buffy person I knew, because my friend Crystal was the most obsessed Buffy person that I knew. We actually drove to Alabama to go to a film festival to watch a film that was written and directed by a future Buffy cast member. And we went solely because that person it was their directorial debut. And we actually went to a film festival and actually met the person, in which whenever that person's around, I will have a story about my encounter with that person. I love Buffy. I think the thing that's funny is like, I didn't watch the TV show because the movie wasn't what I hoped to be. And the whole reason the TV show exists is because the creator hated what the movie was. It wasn't what he wanted to be. He had no control. They rewrote it. They changed things. They changed the tone of it. And so the TV show was a chance for him to kind of get it right in his mind. And as a human being, you know, there's lots of stuff we can say about the creator of the show and the way that he treated people, women especially. But as a writer, he just is like on my wavelength. Like his sense of humor, the way that he, like you said, Jess, he kind of, you know, takes your expectations and subverts them. And that's like a big thing. He like trying to catch you by surprise, and not just in jump scare ways, but trying to like take the formulas that have existed for a long time and tweak them a little bit and do different things with it. That's one of the things I love about Buffy. But it was like the humor and the chemistry of the cast and the characters. That was the stuff that really brought me into Buffy. And of course, it had all sorts of cool supernatural horror trappings as well. But it was like really the characters and the humor and the Buffy speak and all that really is the stuff that made me fall in love with the show.
Yeah, Sarah, I think like through this part of season one, I can understand why people would say that like season one isn't as good as the rest. And obviously I say this without having seen any of the rest of it, but because it is like a little on the corny side, a little cheesy, right? Like even as much as we both found the ventriloquist doll to be horrifying, a little bit of it is like kind of silly and shticky.
Yeah.
And so I can see where, you know, it's not as, I assume it's going to get a little more serious, but still fun in, you know, in later seasons.
Yeah. My answer to that is, like, I've said this a lot. Like, I come from a time where I've seen, like, I watched a lot of Power Rangers when I was a kid. I watched Are You Afraid of the Dark? I've watched, like, a ton of things that I feel as though were as sticky or more very, like, much like this. And because of that, it doesn't really faze me. Like, I watch the puppet show and say, like, this is really stupid. I watched it and I was like, I literally want to jump off a bridge. but I've never had a problem with the fact that it's like a little, could be like a little like kitschy at times. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably a good sign, because like, if I'm not very fazed or bothered by like the kitschiness, then I feel like I'm probably in a good spot. And also like, I don't come into these shows that I watch with like a ton of expectations. Like, you know, like I used to say with Dawson's Creek, like when we got to seasons like 5 and 6, like any Dawson's Creek is good Dawson's Creek. Like, I'm going to come into it with a good attitude and just enjoy the ride. And that's kind of where I'm at with it. And like, I don't think that like I'm like put off by this at all, actually. Like, there's certain things that I'm just like, no, like there's nothing. Like, I really, I mean, like, yes, like I hate the puppet, but like, I think that like I would hate a puppet in any capacity. I combine capacity and puppy. That's where, that's there. Capacity.
Yeah, that's really fair. And I think like, I will say, like, of all the shows that we've watched, I mean, obviously Dawson's Creek and Boy Meets World I'd seen, so I at least had expectations going in already. But like, Buffy is the one that I think is the most talked about, the most like loved, beloved, treasured, even all these years later. You just hear about people who love Buffy. So I guess I still had like certain expectations going in. But like, I'm enjoying the ride, especially, I think the best part about us watching this in our second era of Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, if you want to call it that, is that like, you know, I've learned what to expect from a 90s show specifically, you know. I think that's where I level set my expectations. Yeah. Is we're still in the 90s. There's still certain things, like I'm still going to hate certain characters because they don't age well. And
yeah, like certain
things that just are going to not be great.
Like the puppet that's sexually harassing everybody because he's from the 1930s. And apparently not only did he have to go through the prohibition, he also had to go through the fact that he's a misogynist.
Yeah. So that's rough. But let's start talking about the puppet show, season 1, episode 9. And we start off like this. I thought this was so interesting that we start off like in the perspective of the baddie of the episode. And we just hear like, I will be whole. I will be new. And it's like, what are we doing?
This is my main question about this whole thing. Like, if you're not going to make me think that it's the fucking puppet the entire time, then why is the demon on the floor? Like, is he just like crawling around?
So oh, that's a good question, right? Because it turns out to be a teenager, Todd, right? Like,
yeah, well, so here's the thing, like that initial POV shot, it's meant to make you think that it's from the demon's point of view, but it's not, because you see the kid that turns out to be the demon in this. So you hear the demon's voice, but you have this camera kind of going around and showing everybody, but it shows him, but also it lands on the kid with the dummy. So the kid with the dummy is sitting there. So it's not like you've been following like the demon's point of view either, though. So it's kind of this weird. So it's like trying to do this thing to just kind of weave in and out. And you hear the demon's voice, but it's not from the point of view of any actual character. It's just the camera doing this weird swoopy thing to introduce everyone. But yeah, you see the magician kid like messing with stuff in the opening shot. I noticed that on my rewatch. Like, first time I didn't notice, but I was looking out for the magician kid through the entire thing, trying to see like how much they seated him in.
Yeah.
And definitely that initial shot wasn't supposed to be from the POV of anything, although it kind of made you think that way.
Yeah. An unreliable narrator. It's so awful. I hate being lied to.
Yeah. But honestly, Sarah, when I saw the premise was like a talent show competition for the school, I was all in on this. I was like, yes, this is going to be so fun. There's going to be some bad acts. And like, oh, Cordelia, nothing will endear me more to a character than when they have such an obvious flaw. And Cordelia is singing, like, the audacity of Cordelia to be singing Miss Whitney Houston and like even attempting that. And Sarah, she's so bad. It's so bad.
I mean, she's not a songbird, but she is wearing a silver crushed velvet turtleneck top. And I say she looks stunning. But yeah, like
she's wearing green pants, Todd. She's wearing green pants yet again.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave all the fashion commentary to y'all. That is nothing. Nothing even gets on my radar, even remotely, 99% of the time. I will say the biggest miss that this episode has is we never get to see her with the sparklers. We never got to see Cordelia bring out the sparklers. That would have like brought the whole act together. But no, the show denied us of that, and I will never forgive it for that.
Todd, have you ever joined or entered a talent show?
Not really. I have performed at a talent show, but that was because I was part of the group putting it on. So 1 year student council at my school hosted a talent show, and I was like helped like with like an introductory skit type thing. And then I think it was my senior year, we did the competitive speech program. We're the ones that host the talent show. And so all the competitive speech kids like did one of their pieces during the talent show, but we weren't actually competing. And there was a little bit of scandal because I slipped up and I said the word damn instead of darn whenever I did Royal Dolls and Jack and the Beanstalk. Yeah, which I still remember to this day. It's burned in my brain forever.
Todd, that's disgusting. I can't believe you.
I know. And I didn't even really realize I'd done it till afterwards. You're like, I can't believe you said that. I'm like, said what? You said damn. I'm like,
oh, no.
I know. It's awful.
Jessica, you have so much talent. Have you been in a talent show?
No, I don't know that. I mean, I suppose my school probably did one at some point, but I never was involved in any of it. So no talent shows for me. What about you?
No, I'm talentless. Anyway, so we see the trio, Scooby Squad. They come in.
Scooby Squad, yeah.
The Scoobies.
The Scoobies, they come in and like they are mocking the talent show. Apparently, if you join or enter the talent show, you're a goober. Like, it's
not only that, but they're also like, aha, Giles, you have to, because he's basically has to be the one like coordinating this, and he looks miserable. And they're like, this is what I like is like, we're now to the point where Giles has a relationship with the trio where they can like rib each other a little back and forth. It's very obvious that it's, you know, everyone had those teachers where it's, oh, this is my favorite teacher. I'm going to joke around with them a little bit. And I love that we get to see that in this episode.
Yeah, I totally agree. This whole introductory thing of like them coming in to watch and mock and laugh, this whole sequence of them like giving Giles a hard time and him like, if you had the slightest bit of human decency, you would help out, you know? And this whole thing is great because just his reaction, you know, they came in and he's just like, oh, you three. Like, he knows what's coming. He's bracing himself because he knows that they're got to rip him a new one. And it's just so good. Like, the relationship, like you said, Jess, like, has developed at this point. They have this camaraderie and they have this little group that has found each other and bonded over the horrible things they've been through. And that sort of, like, kind of found family type thing is another thing that I kind of love about the show, is, like, the people coming together and those friendships forming.
I especially love that they're Buffy says, like, Giles, unto every generation is born one that must run the annual talentless show. And then I also love that she's like, I'm gonna do one of your roles and I'm gonna watch.
It is pretty fun. Buffy is a three earring on the earlobe girly. And as a fellow three earring on the earlobe girly, I salute you.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have my ears pierced, but I haven't worn earrings in many, many years.
Oh.
So.
Closed up. You're done.
I still think I could poke them through if I wanted to.
Oh.
But I don't really want to.
Can you let me do that?
No, absolutely not. Plus, honestly, like, let's be real. Like, logically, I podcast a lot. I wear headphones a lot. Like, I just don't want earrings in.
Okay. So we meet the new principal, and I hate him. Like, I honestly, once the demon wasn't Morgan or it wasn't the puppet, I was like, it's the principal, right?
He's the newest guy. Yeah.
There's something up with him. I don't trust him. He is so mean. He's so mean, but like for no good reason. So basically, he is a strict principal. He doesn't let anybody get away with shit. He forces the Scoobies to be in the talent show because they were cutting school, doing busy work. They were fighting demons, but it doesn't matter. They get punished. They're forced to go into the talent show. And he basically, I forget, Todd, what's his name? Mr. Mean?
Principal Snyder.
Principal Snyder. He's awful. I would not want to be in school while he's my principal.
He's very strict. And I think the thing I like least about him is like, okay, usually you would assume if someone becomes a principal, they at least somewhat enjoy
children,
like, kids.
Yeah.
And this guy seems to have no patience. Like, why are you, he's getting on their case for like joking with their teacher and like having a little fun. To me, that's like such a ridiculous reason to get on someone's case. Like, I understand if they skip school, like, but making them join a talent show for skipping school also feels like a really ridiculous punishment.
I mean, Jess, that's the kind of woolly-headed liberal thinking that leads to being eaten. One of my favorite quotes of the episode. I do like the fact that he keeps referring to the fact that the previous principal got eaten.
Yeah, he just says it so casually. He says to Buffy in the scene, he's like, oh, like your former principal is all touchy-feely, but he got eaten. And I'm like, why are you reminding of them of that? That's so traumatic.
I really think that everybody is so jaded in this town about death because, once again, Buffy is just so nonchalant when she finds Morgan dead and brainless. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we're like really not caring. I guess I think I would be bothered if there was some dead people every single day at my school. And also, I'm not a parent, but if I did have children, these kids are getting pulled out of the school. Like, pulled out immediately. Like, I don't care if real estate is $40,000 for a house in Sunnydale, California. We're getting out of there.
Yeah, I guess people just, after living on a hellmouth for a certain amount of time, you just get desensitized to it all. I think it's just like the new normal. It's like, oh yeah, another dead body. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know,
well, this is why I wonder if this principal's even going to last very long, because like, I feel like he's not going to be able to handle all of the wildness happening around him. Like, he's so strict and by the book. I'm like, he's not going to be able to handle all these deaths and wild occurrences.
Well, I just don't think that anybody that is a principal at the school is long for the world, and mainly because I just think that they're all going to be dead in some capacity. Like, maybe that's the running joke. Like, maybe
they can't keep a principal.
They just can't keep a principal, and we're just constantly going to get new principals, and they're just going to get all killed off. And then once again, it's like, that's a job that I won't take. Like, I saw what happened to the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers every year. Nothing good, right? Just nothing good.
Yeah, this is true.
It's a curse.
So then it's time for Morgan to go on stage, and he has his ventriloquist doll, and everyone seems like not really about it until the dummy starts like talking in this, like, I don't know. It sounded very New York City, like raspy New York City vibes of like this older guy. And he like, Morgan isn't very good, but then once the dummy starts making fun of Morgan, I think Sid, is that what the dummy's name is? Once
Sid.
He's making fun of Morgan, then everyone is actually starting to chuckle. But I don't know, Todd, I was immediately a little bit suspicious and a little bit uncomfortable because Morgan looked very surprised whenever Sid was talking.
Yeah, I think the biggest question of this episode is, how did Sid and Morgan get hooked up together? Yeah. Like, was Sid speaking here part of the planned act all along, or was Morgan actually surprised but then was rolling with it? I can't think he's really rolling with it that much, because I think I'd be like freaking out if my puppet started talking and didn't know it could. But yeah, exactly how Sid and Morgan got hooked up in the first place is like a big question that I don't think really gets addressed on the show. But yeah, the question I had here was like, yeah, was this part of the act, or was like said like, screw it, this is painful, I've got to take it on, and then Morgan just rolled with it.
Yeah, it really, that part was a little bit confusing, I guess. So like, I know that Sid was seeking out like the smartest person that he could go along with, because he needed like, I guess, brain power in order to defeat the demons and find who that was. So I suppose like, if it was well known that Morgan was the smartest kid in class, in the school, then I understand why he got targeted by Sid. But also, like, how did the puppet get here anyway?
Yeah, like, we don't know their origin story.
Because, like,
at
first, I thought this was going to be, like, one of those things where, like, Morgan went to a thrift store and he found, like, this puppet. He was like, oh, like, cool puppet. Like, I'm going to take this. I'm going to try and make this my new talent. And then it turns out that the puppet is, like, possessed by a demon. Because that is actually another one of my greatest fears. It's like, I think thrift stores are so cool, but, like, where did this lamp come from? And how do I know that there is not some like evil spirits that I'm taking back to my house once I take this lamp? Mm-hmm. You know, is that crazy? Sure. It might be crazy.
A little bit, but I kind of get it if you're into all that stuff.
I don't know if I'm like, into it. I'm just saying that, like, I don't know like what kind of negative energy all this stuff in the thrift shops come from.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know there's negative energy in the locker room because this girl is like getting changed. She has like this ballet outfit and everything. And she hears something. She's like, hello, hello. And there's no one there. But we're like from the perspective of the demon. And again, we hear, I will be flesh. And it's like, I really like Todd, something I said earlier about Buffy that I really enjoy is I enjoy when like the way they cut scenes together. They cut from like one scene to the next. And so I loved this as like a, you know, that I will be flesh, and then boom, opening credits, you know?
Yeah. I think the direction and editing of the show is really spot on. I think a lot of that is like spelled out in the scripts as well. But yeah, I think this show does like a really good job of doing like really interesting things with the editing, really interesting thing with the transitions, and really smart and funny and impactful things like that.
Yeah. So then we're back at the tryouts, and we have the magician. So this is our baddie, this guy. This is the demon, the magician guy, which again, we barely see him to the point where it's like we get this one shot of him and then we don't really see him again, or at least I didn't pay attention to him again until he became important. So I was shocked as hell when it turns out that he's the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, he shows up a handful of times throughout the episode. He's one of the people that they interview one-on-one.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
About the death. He's one of the people that you kind of see him, like, his act kind of, like, self-imploding whenever he's, like, trying to do it. You know, you see him, like, two or three times sprinkled throughout the episode. So they did introduce him earlier. But, yeah, it's a huge shock whenever he turns out to be the demon because... But it shouldn't, because he's like one, I guess there's not that many kids that we get introduced to in the talent show who it could be if it's not Morgan. But if you're not paying attention to the whole thing, then you're not really thinking about it that way.
Exactly. Because that's why, I mean, Sarah, you probably agree. Like when we find out, okay, Sid isn't actually bad and it's not Morgan, my next thought was the principal, because he felt like the most visible new character we'd seen.
Yeah, I really do think that the magician being the person was kind of a out of left field for me. Like, I wasn't expecting it, and not even a like, oh, like I had no idea that this was coming, more than like, oh, you were totally irrelevant and I didn't even realize your existence. I don't even know his name.
Yeah, if not for the fact that the like the way he was going to get Giles's brain was through like a magic trick, I wouldn't have even known at all who that kid was. It's not like I recognized him. It was more of, oh, he's doing magic, so he obviously is the magician.
Yeah, I think that like I would have rather at least spent a little more time with him so that like I had like any semblance of remembering who this person was. But I mean, you know what they say, Jess, beggars can't be choosers.
So then We see the trio. Apparently the trio's plan for the talent show is to just to do a dramatic reading, because they're like, this is like the easiest thing we could do, so it doesn't require any talent.
That I can do. I said that I was talentless. It is true. I can read ish. Actually, I can sometimes read.
Although they do actually, like, they say they're doing dramatic reading, but they actually do memorize their lines whenever we see them perform at the end. Yeah. So that's a little bit harder than just like sitting up there and reading from something.
Yeah. But they get interrupted when creepy pervy Sid is just like, look at those goodies over there.
Yeah. Okay. This is what I don't like about. Okay, like, I don't like any of it, to be honest with you, but this is what I don't like. I do not like that Sid the puppet is, like, a horn dog. Like, okay, actually, if he's been a puppet for... Okay, so we know that he was around from the 1930s. Okay, so, like 50, 60 years of being a puppet or something like that, and, like, not getting any, I guess I understand, but also, like... You're a puppet and you're probably dickless. So it's like, what are you going to do about it? Nothing.
Yeah, I think that was my thought. Like, yeah, this is a very frustrated puppet. He has not been able to do anything for several decades. And so that partially explains it, but it's not great.
He has no hormones, though. He has no, like, it's just him thinking about it.
And I think it's wild to me that Morgan, like, in this moment, if I'm Morgan and this puppet that people think I'm controlling and talking through is saying things like, oh, the goodies, and like calling people honey, I'm like, the jig is up. Like, I am going to set you down and like, no, thank you, ma'am.
It's like, I got to tell everybody, I'm so sorry, but I am, this puppet is possessed. Yeah, it is not, is a perv, me. Not me. It's not me. Like, I'm not that good at ventriloquism. Like, yeah. I promise you.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't know, Morgan might have been a perv too. Morgan, oh, finally, someone's saying what I'm thinking. We don't know.
Probably. I mean, like, now that you say that, true. But, yeah, I don't want to get, like, a sexual harassment lawsuit because of a puppet. Like, at this rate, like, why would you not just throw the puppet, like over the river? You know?
Yeah.
There is some weird sort of dependence going on between Morgan and Sid because of like how upset Morgan gets when he can't find Sid later.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But yeah, I do love, because Sid is still nasty and he's like, oh, you know what they say, once you're all wood, nothing's as good.
Wait, is his name Sid Nasty? Isn't that somebody?
I think that's somebody, isn't it?
Sid Vicious.
Sid Vicious.
No, Sid Nasty. You're Sid Nasty
now.
That's
his name, is Sid Nasty. Yeah. But I love Buffy threatening to turn him into a Duraflame log. That was incredible. So I don't know. Like, then we hear more from the new principal. He's having a conversation with Giles, and we understand exactly who this guy is. Like, he's oh, kids need discipline. Kids need this. Kid needs that. And Todd, this is when he says your favorite line about that's the kind of woolly-headed liberal thinking that leads to being eaten.
Yeah. And he also lists off these things like suicide, missing persons, spontaneous cheerleader combustion. Just like, you know, I feel like they're calling back all the things that actually happened on the show so far.
Yeah.
This school has a problem. And once again, if I was a parent, they would be pulled immediately. It's not funny. My kid would be next. We all know that my child is not like being able to survive any sort of like adversity, especially if they have to go running. So it's just not cool. And once again, like, he's not very sensitive to the fact that they are having some strife in this school. They're just like, yeah, he died. He got eaten.
he does not believe in sensitivity. That's, you know, yeah, he does not believe in, doesn't believe in touchy feely things. Yeah. This, this man, is the last time that the school is getting touched or feeled or something like that.
Yeah, this man reminds me of my grandfather who sent me upstairs when I started to cry in his house. He used to say, no crying in my house.
Oh, no.
Sent upstairs because I cried all the fucking time. Joke's on you, Grandpa.
Yeah, so this, I can't. Like, this is a very old school mentality that this guy has. And yeah, I do, Todd, I do appreciate them calling back to all the ridiculous things that have happened, because most shows are just like, yeah, this just happens here. Like, this is just Hellmouth. But he's like, we did this and we got this and cheerleaders are self-combusting. And he's very on to the trio. He is like, they're bad news bears. I've got my eye on them.
Yeah, he knows there's something sus with them. He thinks that they're bad, and they're not really bad. They're trying to stop the bad. But, I mean, it's understandable because they do spend all their time, like, outside of class and doing weird things. And so, I mean, he's definitely has twigged onto the fact that there's something off with them. He doesn't just know quite what it is.
It's just so offensive because here they are being, like, hardworking individuals saving Sunnydale from Hellmouth and demons and vampires, and they get no respect, and they get told that they're, like, ruffian children. Just,
yeah.
Well, to be fair, they're not telling anyone that they're saving the world on the reg, so no one can really know what they're doing. In fact,
they know.
They start to mention it earlier, they're fighting demons, and they have to, like, stop, and he's like, you're fighting? You know, so they, maybe if they had actually explained, maybe he would cut them some more slack. But even then, I doubt it. I don't think Snyder's much of a slack cutting person.
No, definitely not. Especially not when the ballerina's body is found in the locker room. And it's like, oh, here we go. And of course, Xander, in typical Xander fashion, is just like, I hate this school. Like, everything bad happens here. And as usual, Buffy is like, oh, is this a vampire? And Giles is like, no, I don't think so. Her entire heart was removed, so not great.
I'm normally here for the Xander slander. I'm about to say his reaction to "I hate this school" is like the most logical thing Xander's probably done in the entire show.
I just feel like every episode he says it. I feel like every single episode he's like, "Why is this happening?" And every single episode, someone's like, "We're on Hellmouth, Xander."
Well, like, he's just upset because, like, the hot ballerina girl that's, like, why he's bothered.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think this is one of Xander's best episodes of the season.
I agree with you. He does help.
Yeah, he actually helps. He does, like, there are two or three things he does are actually helpful. He's not super gross about, you know, we don't really have him, like, being, like, he's not pining after Buffy this time around. He's not
being a creeper.
Yeah, like, whenever Sid is being rude to Willow, he kind of steps in a little bit, you know. We don't have, like, a lot of the really bad Xander stuff in this episode. This is one of the better Xander episodes. I do have to say, whenever I first watched this, like, much like, you know, Kevin Maddejo, you know, my takes on the characters whenever I first watched it are very different from my takes now. I was a much bigger Xander fan at the time. Now, looking back, I can go, ooh, yeah, no, that's not great. But whenever I first watched the show, Xander was, like, one of my favorite characters. I admit that. And yeah, but this time around,
that's fair. I mean, I think you tend to relate to, like, what you're most, like, you relate to what you know, right? And, like, you were a young guy and Xander is a young guy. Like, it makes sense. But yeah, so this episode, I did find myself not, I don't say I liked Xander because I don't ever really like him, but, like, I didn't hate him as much as I usually do. And I will give him credit later. He does help out. But yeah, they're talking to Giles about, like, what this could possibly be. And he talks about demons that do, like, feed off human hearts, but then they see that there's a knife being, like, taken away, and it's like, oh, but demons use, like, claws and teeth. So why are they using a knife? And Buffy's like, well, that, you know, it's probable that the killer is a human being. And so it's like, now they have to, like, figure out what human is doing this. So instead of it just being, like, you know, a demon where it makes it, you could figure out why they're doing it because they're just like, that's just their nature. The reasons humans kill are much more complicated. And so that makes this a little bit more difficult to figure out.
Yeah. And I guess the question you have to ask at this point is like, okay, if it is a human, is it their job to stop them? or should they just be focused on the supernatural stuff? I mean, if Buffy has superpowers, she may as well like stop people from getting hurt. But it is just kind of interesting that they all go to, oh, well, it's a human, so that makes it harder for us to stop it, instead of going, oh, well, let the police do their job. It's kind of just like an interesting thing that a their immediate reaction isn't like, oh, well, it's out of our jurisdiction, but they still are all like, no, we still want to help. Even if it is human, we still like feel like we should be the ones doing something. They've been the ones doing things in the background, you know, nonstop. So they just keep on doing it, even if it is just a normal person and not something supernatural.
That is interesting. It's like, well, you know, if you think it's a human, like at what point do they just pass it on to the cops? And I don't like, it's interesting because like we really haven't had a run-in with Sunnydale cops, have we? I can't really remember. Like they're just sleeping on the job, right?
Yeah,
like they're
not doing anything. We've seen a ton of cops on about like anywhere around here.
Like carting off the dead bodies is about it. I think that's like the only interaction we've seen with police is like here. Whenever they find the dead body, and the police are there, you know, taping off the crime scene and bagging the knife. But and actual like dealing with the cops and the cops inserting themselves into stuff. Yeah, we really don't see anything like that so
interesting.
Far.
Yeah,
this place is literally hell on earth, and the cops can't be bothered to do one fucking thing.
But I will say, like, I feel like it does make sense for them to get involved. Obviously, they're kind of vigilantes, like anyway. But I feel like it makes sense for them to get involved just because of the nature of the murder of like a human heart just being removed from someone's body is like very gruesome and specific. So I could understand them thinking there could be something supernatural happening regardless of if it's a human. But they go to work. Go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, and Buffy's the one, because like, everyone else is very much on board the human thing, but Buffy's the one's like, oh, I don't know, Hellmouth guys, I think there's probably something supernatural here. Listen to the Slayer folks, you know, I think this is one of the things, like, you know, Buffy, yeah, she's a vampire slayer, but I think she's much more in tune with the supernatural than the others are, and they don't really want to listen to her whenever she starts trying to tell them something supernatural is going on.
It's really annoying, because, like, it's every single time she's like, well, my instinct is telling me it could be this. And they act like she's like overreacting or is like not, I don't know. Like, I really cannot wait for a period of time where Buffy can be like, this is my instinct. And people just like, they believe her. It's kind of, it's just like kind of irritating, because it's just like, she is right every single time you all question her. Every single time. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of. This was half right.
Yeah, so the group goes to work basically talking to everyone who was in the talent show about, like, okay, who was the last person you saw her with and blah, blah, blah. And they talk to the magician, too, so he gets another little moment on the screen. But everyone is pointing the finger at Morgan. They're all like, he's a little weird, like, he had his puppet. Which, like, I feel like, let's be real, like, anybody who's a ventriloquist, I feel like is going to get tagged as someone who's a bit weird, you know, like it is a weird hobby. So they all kind of meet back up after they speak to other people, and they're all like, well, everyone's talking about Morgan, like every single person has pegged Morgan as someone to be like keeping an eye on. We start to get creepy with Sid beyond the perviness, where Buffy walks into the auditorium and Morgan is there with like Sid, and Sid is sitting on the stool, but the way they have him positioned is he's like nearly looking over his shoulder at Buffy, and it like immediately gave me like the ick, just immediately.
Ooh. Yeah, this is like where like I started getting like, well, I was already creeped out, but just seeing him on the stool and them talking to each other, I was just like, nope, 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 nope. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And the way that they're talking is like, oh, like just one more and then we're done. This is what Sid is saying. And it's very like Three's Company, like misunderstanding sort of a thing, because they're talking about like they think that at this point Buffy's the demon and he's just like only one more demon and then the curse is broken, but Buffy thinks that it's like only one more human to kill for their organs and then like I'll be released. So everyone's suspicious of everybody, And we hear Morgan being like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to be involved in this. And he's kind of getting like pushed into it. I don't know why. Like, just like put the puppet in the box and call it a day.
Well, yeah, because Sid, when Buffy is questioning Morgan, Sid speaks up and he's like, look, sweetheart, he answered your questions. Like, very like on Buffy's case. And Buffy's like, oh, like obviously thinking it's Morgan speaking through Sid. And yeah, it's, I did love the moment, Todd, which I think we all knew was coming when Morgan puts Sid in the box and he's like, it's him. Like, it's
him. I'm like, sure it is.
Likely story.
It's like the new meme that's going around is like, is Sid in the room with us right now? Like, everyone's doing that right now.
Yeah. So they all have their finger pointed at Morgan at this point. And I love Buffy and Xander are like, okay, what's the next thing we're going to do? Okay, maybe one of us should wear a wire. I just, I don't know. It was so funny to me. But then Buffy brings up the demon theory and Giles is like, the thing is, this is the problem with the principal assigning Giles to the talent show is he doesn't have enough time to research about demons now, Todd. This is a travesty.
Yeah, yeah. He's having to do his actual job at the school instead of his outside job at the school. Yeah, it definitely is a big thing. But and they're all like, why can't we just like blow the talent show off? But he's like, no, Snyder's already onto you. We have got to keep low profiles. I'm blowing off Snyder's directives. It's just going to get us more attention and make it harder to do our job moving forward.
Right. So Buffy says, okay, well, I'm going to look in his locker, at least see if there's like a heart in there. Maybe there's some kind of evidence that I could find. And so we see her like after school, just skulking around, you know, and I love that she pretends to like open the locker. She's like two this way, three this way, give a look, see, smash, just punches in the locker lock and opens the door. And I was like, hell yeah, Buffy, you got it. But of course she gets caught by freaking Principal Snyder. Like, I swear he's stalking her at this point. Like, he feels like he always has eyes on her and it's very annoying. And I was just not here for it.
He knows she's trouble.
Yeah, he catches her. He says, what are you doing here? It's late. It's after school hours. He thinks that she's like a suspect. And the thing that I thought was interesting was he never notices that she like punched in the lock on the locker. You know, she's just like, she looks, sees the puppet case, but it's completely empty. And she's like, oh, okay. Nothing that I needed here. I mean, just close this and I'll be on my way.
She's so strong, so strong, so impressive, so suspicious, because she's not even being, she's not being very like covert mission because stupid Sid is right there. Watch it.
Well, yeah, they're peeking from
in the creepy corner.
It's like Morgan and Sid, and they saw Buffy all like push in the locker. Like, they saw her super strength, and they're like, okay, we gotta go. And yeah, this is when like we get Morgan and Sid arguing. Oh my God. Morgan's like, what was the name? I forget the name of the computer virus guy, where it's like, I can't do it. I can't do it. You must.
What are you talking about?
From the Jacked In episode.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Yeah. But Morgan doesn't want to do it. And Sid says it's the only way. She's the one. So yeah, at this point, Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, but Sid thinks that Buffy is the demon.
Right. They saw her punch in the locker and saw how strong she was. And like, oh, the only way she could be that strong is if she is the demon. So she's the one that I have to kill.
Right. But obviously Morgan does not want to be involved with that. We get a little moment between Joyce and Buffy, where the Joyce is like very excited that Buffy is in the talent show. She's like, oh, I can't wait to watch you. Do we have our feelings changed on Joyce at all yet?
I'm very indifferent towards her at the moment.
Too. Yeah. Maybe she'll get some more screen time, but she, I will say she does ask like, hey, is there anything bothering you? Like, I got to give her a little bit of credit. I feel like she's actually trying. She's trying to engage with Buffy in this moment.
Like, mom, everything's bothering me. The weight of the world is on my shoulders. I'm literally so stressed out. There's a creepy puppet following me and nobody believes me. And I have to work with this fucking idiot kid that is stupid.
Yeah. And we're on Hellmouth, Mom. You moved us.
Yeah, you moved us here. It's all your fault.
Well, Buffy did burn down the gym, which is the reason they had to move.
It was partially my fault, but now it's really my fault.
Yeah. Sarah, was this the scariest part of the episode for you when we see like Sid outside the window and then we hear the like little tippy tappies all around?
I barfed. It was so bad. When his little face was in the window, I literally lost it. I lost it. I hate it. And then he like makes his way in and then he's like all over the fucking floor. And then she like he like pounces on her like a cat. And then she screams and then he like tip taps out and then all of a sudden he's out the window. I hated it. It was disgusting. Well, like whenever his little legs were running about without her, I literally wanted to die.
The worst part is, I feel like, and Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, because you love like horror and scary things. And for me, the worst part about this was it's very much preying on the fears that we all have when we're like laying in bed about to go to sleep. Like, one, getting murdered, two, monsters under the bed, like three, what goes bump in the night? You know what I mean? Like, it's all preying on all of those scary things that we have to live with daily. And so I was like, Sarah, I'm with you. This was horrifying to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is like you think you're supposed to be safe in bed. You're in your home, you're safe in bed, you should be fine. But there's always that, what's that noise? What's that noise I just heard? There's always that fear in the dark of the unknown. And so you have that unknown and the little tippy tap noise that shouldn't be there, an unnatural noise. And then there's something in the covers, under the covers with you that shouldn't be there. You don't have a pet. You don't have anything that should be doing that. What is it freaking you out? Yeah, it's definitely like prying on the kind of like primal, like fear of the unknown, fear of the dark.
Why did he have to walk on his own? I hated it. It was so bad. And he's going to do it more
too. That's not even the only time.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's terrible.
But yeah, Joyce wakes up, they look around and she's like, oh, you probably just had a nightmare. But Buffy knows that she did not have a nightmare. She knows something's up. And then so we do see the magician more than I remembered seeing him, because we see him at the beginning of the next scene where like you said, Todd, his magic tricks aren't working. Like his assistant was supposed to disappear in the box and she didn't. But I did do a good job at like showing him, but not having us be suspicious, because we kind of move on, right? To like Cordelia, she's complaining to Giles.
Yes, because they're going to have the rock band play before her inspirational song. Mm-hmm. And her song is about dignity and human feelings and personal hygiene or something.
Yeah.
And it's sappy. And no one's going to feel sappy after listening to a rock band. I love that. You know, yes, greatest love of all is all about personal hygiene. We all know that's the main thrust of that song.
The greatest love of all is between a person and their toothbrush.
Okay. So like my concentration right now is on like, okay, picture this. You are a demon, right? You do demon things. What you want is a heart. You're basically like the Wizard of Oz. You want a heart, you want a brain, you want courage. Sure. Why is the demon like, I need to not only get my heart and my brain, but I also need to be a believable magician? Like, he's like, I need this in my entire being to be a good, believable magician. It's just like, this is his side hobby, right? Like, he's like, you know what? When I was a baby demon kid, I got like a magic kit. And ever since then, I wanted to be a demon magician. Like he has aspirations.
Not even like heart eating demons can resist the allure of prestidigitation. You know, it's
he just wants someone to clap for him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, dream big, demon, dream big.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, I love Giles just like looking at Cordelia and he says like, oh, I'm sorry, your hair. And she's like, what? There's something wrong with my hair? She just leaves. She can't even stand it. And I love Giles being like, oh, okay, Xander was right. That did work. And I, again, good on Xander for giving Giles that tip. That was a good tip.
Yeah.
It was so funny. Yeah.
I think we did a, so one thing I did want to mention is during the scene where they're all interrogating people, Xander got tasked with having to talk to Cordelia, who made it all about herself. And he's just like, oh, kill me now.
Mm-hmm. But Buffy, so she's like, listen, everyone, I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure Sid was in my room alone and alive. And she's like, it pounced on my face like a cat.
Yeah, but she's like, it pounced on my face. And it's like a cat? Yeah. And then it jumped out the window. And then it's like a cat? Yeah. No.
Yeah. Like, the thing is I agree with you, Sarah, at this point, Buffy is the Slayer. Like, we should be believing her, you know, like, believe her when she says that Sid was in her room.
I would believe her at this point in time. I'd be like, you know what? You're the expert. I'm going to follow your lead, especially mm-hmm. because I don't know anything. I'm just a regular human. You are the Slayer. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the things that does frustrate me. It's funny on the rewatch, like noticing how often it's happened. It's not happening like every episode, but it's happened like multiple times now. Spoiler alert, it's not gonna be the last time that it happened.
Oh, I'm sure it's gonna be a running yeah, thing.
There's at least one episode where it was like one of the most infuriating things in the world to me. So one of my least favorite episodes of the show. It's the thing, like, okay, trust, she has earned your trust. She has you've earned, like, after like the third or fourth time where she says something and you're like, oh no. I mean, it's very television, you know, mandated that they don't believe her is what it is. It's very much like, oh yeah, we need them to not believe her so that the plot can progress the way that we have come up with the idea for the plot to progress. Yeah. When it doesn't make any sense for them not to believe her at this moment.
I mean, it's really just going to get everybody in a pickle eventually. If you don't believe her, then it's just, I feel like they're going to fall for a trap or something. Like maybe a baby child vampire that is super evil.
Oh yeah, no, none of the chosen one this episode.
Yeah, I can totally see like, oh, Buffy being like, I'm really skeeved out by that kid. And everybody's like, no, she's a kid. And then next thing you know, they're going down to the blood jacuzzi, taking a little dip, and
not a single moment with Daddy Vamps this episode.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been in a few episodes. He's
training
busy.
The anointed one.
Training the anointed one. He had to get a service guy in to fix up his jacuzzi. He got an esthetician to clean up his little dirty face.
I mean, he's in mourning from Darla. That's, you know, what's going on.
He has a veil, aren't we all?
But Buffy's like, I'd like to get a moment alone with Morgan. Like, I want to talk to him. And Giles, he's had some time to do some research now. And he says, I found the possibility of a culprit. There's a brotherhood of seven demons that take a form of young humans. And every 7 years, they need human organs, a brain and a heart to maintain their humanity. Otherwise, they turn back into their original form, which is like a really ugly sketching of a gross demon. So they want to stay pretty, which is very funny to me because the vampires have a glamour, and if they don't, they're uggos. So a lot of this show is about being pretty. Everybody needs to be pretty. So then we're in a history class, and this moment was so creepy to me. In large part due to the eyebrows, Buffy's just trying to like live her life in class. And why is Sid even out? Like, this isn't the talent show. You're in class. But suddenly, Todd, the head, the neck just swivels around. And freaking Sid is eyeballing Buffy.
Yeah, it's creepy. Definitely creepy. So I will admit, mentioned several times, I'm a huge horror fan. I've been watching horror movies for as long as I can remember. I love it. I rarely get scared by anything. Like, nothing really scares me from horror movies. I am, even as a kid, it took a lot to like really get under my skin. But one of the things that really stuck with me as a kid, there was a television ad for a movie called Magic, starring Sir Anthony Hopkins. It was the guy with the ventriloquist dummy, and the ad was just like the ventriloquist dummy's like head turning around and looking at the camera as this like voiceover was going. And I was like 4 at the time, but it freaked me out. It gave me the wig, like Buffy said. Now I got over it pretty quickly, but it's one of the things that is like burned into my brain, that ad. So I definitely can see why, if you are not a fan of puppets, that this scene really gets you.
Like, I knew that his head was going to turn around. Like, I've seen that before in other capacities. I was just waiting for it to happen, and I hated it. I hated it. Cordelia thinks that Morgan has a crush on her, which I would understand coming from that perspective, I guess. I'd be like, yeah, I guess. But also, oh, that's, he's like nagging so weird.
You. He's like playing with you. But this is when the teacher gets fed up and is like, I'm taking your puppet. You'll get him after school. And she shoves Sid in a cupboard.
Good.
Good. But the look on Morgan's face. Up. And like later, it's like he looks really like he's missing a piece of himself almost. Like there, it's just this weird dependence. Well,
now, Todd, am I like, okay, because like they kept talking throughout the episode that like Morgan seemed like it was getting weaker. The puppet was not taking any life force away from him, right? It's just it's just the unfortunate brain cancer that he's ailed with.
Yeah, there is no indication that anything was happening to him due to magic stuff. It was just he happened to have a cancer, and that's why he's getting weaker. The Sid was not leeching his life force as far as we were told. So I don't think that was it.
So depressing. I hated that realization that this poor guy has gone through enough in the last year. He's getting horrible migraines. He has to miss half his schoolwork, half the school year, because he has to go to the neurologist. And then on top of that, some fucking demon stole his brain and then rejected it because of his cancer. I'm like, this is the worst way to go out.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And he like, he seems very lost, right? He goes to Mrs. Jackson, the teacher, after class, and he's like, oh, you said I could have him back. But when she opens the cupboard, he's not there, which is so creepy, scurrying around doing his little tippy taps everywhere. And Morgan just seems kind of lost, like without him. And when, so Giles, Willow, and Buffy come into the library with all these like costumes for the talent show. And there's Xander with Sid, just like messing with him, like playing with the doll. And Buffy looks really creeped out, and she's like, you shouldn't be like doing that, which I agreed. Like, I was like, we don't know. At this point, we still think Sid is evil. And I was like, we don't know how, like, what his relationship with Morgan is like. It's possible that you put your hand up the puppet's butt and suddenly that's it. Now it controls you or something. Well, I don't know.
That's what I was worried about as well, because I still thought that it was like the puppet was the demon at this point.
Yeah. Ugh. Creeps me out. I can't. So creepy. So Buffy's gonna go try to find Morgan, and they're like, okay, like keep an eye on the puppet, you know, don't leave it alone. So we're gonna split the party. Buffy's looking for Morgan. Giles and Willow are on team research, which we love, because again, Todd, this is something I would like to see. I know it's not a thing that, like, based on the lore, it will happen, but I want Giles, when Giles retires, I want Willow to be the next watcher. But I know that's not, it's like, oh, but Giles is like his dad before him and blah blah blah, but what we don't know, that I don't think Giles has any children, so I feel like he needs to bestow that upon Willow next, because Willow, she's with it, she's researching, she's always willing to go through the books.
Yeah, Willow is, you know, the nerdy sidekick here, and she's like banished to the demon section of the card catalog once again. And she says it kind of like resignedly, but you know she's enjoying it. You know she's enjoying getting to be the teacher's pet that gets to go and do the research and find all the stuff. Yeah. You know, there's like a little part of her nerdy little heart that is just all a flutter because she's getting to show off.
Mm-hmm. So Buffy leaves. And she's looking for Morgan. She like goes backstage. She's like looking for him everywhere. She can't find him. And who does she run into but suspicious ass principal here? Yeah, just like on her ass constantly, Sarah.
It's suspicious. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this guy is, we'll find out eventually, he's some sort of entity, monster, something or other. I don't trust him. That guy's not a principal.
He's so creepy, especially when he's like, oh, do you really think with everything happening here, a girl such as yourself should be alone? And it's like, well, I'm not alone, but I'm here with a big old creepo like you, Principal Snyder.
Yeah, I don't trust him, right? Like, he's something, no, right?
He's spooky. He's creeping. He's lurking in the shadows.
He's something. I know he is. I don't know what, but he's something. And I don't like it.
Yeah. I say, I think the one indictment on Xander this episode is that, like, he really does, like, leave Sid alone for a second when he's not supposed to, right? He's supposed to be in charge of watching Sid.
He was still in the same room. I watched this back and all. Okay. So, like, he's in the shot when he goes up to the big book. And then the second that he turns back towards the thing, he's gone. So, like, I don't totally blame Xander.
It took one second, I guess. Yeah.
But it's not like he had his eyes on him the entire time anyway.
He should have shackled himself to Sid.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not necessarily a great endorsement, but to be fair, like, Xander and Giles and Willow, none of them think that there's anything. They took Sid because they wanted to get him away from Morgan, so Morgan
would
be forced
to
talk.
They think Morgan is the bad one, right?
Yeah, they thought that without Sid there to talk through, Morgan might have to talk to Buffy. So for the three of them, this is just like, oh yeah, we're keeping this away from Morgan, and that's it. Now, they should have listened to Buffy and should have known.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, it's not a perfect excuse, but for what they think the puppet is, like, Xander turning his back on the puppet for a few moments, like, makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. And I think they only start to worry when Willow finds something that says, like, well, there are occasions where there are, like, dolls that have consciousness and they want to become human, and they do that by harvesting organs. And so they're like, oh, okay. And then they hear Xander go, oh, and they're like, he's gone. Ah! That's not great.
I do like, you know, they find out, they all kind of like look down at the feet, like look around waiting to see the little pitter patter thing coming at them.
It's like they're standing on the desk, which was so funny. It's like what you do if you had a rat in the building.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like when there's like a mouse, it's like you gotta stand on the table because you don't want the little mouse feet scurrying on you. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Buffy is still looking for Morgan. And unfortunately she does find him, but she finds him brainless on the floor. Dead.
Horrible. Just horrible. I feel so bad for
story.
Yes, I feel so bad for him. He's just trying to live his life.
Yeah. And Todd, to your point, like the reactions to people dying, like she's just like, oh, demon's got himself a brain.
Yeah, I mean, they're just jaded. They've seen too much and they're just like, oh yeah, here you go. It's gonna take a lot to get a reaction from a dead body, from Buffy.
Yeah. So she gets a chandelier dropped on her and she's like looking around. And again, we're getting the little like skitters, right? And she's like, who's ever out there? I'm going to hurt you badly. It's such a ridiculous line. But like Sid is coming at her with a knife. And this is where it gets like very cheesy and corny, right? Yeah. Where we see the dummy with the knife like coming at her.
Yeah, this is definitely like the turning point of the episode where this was actually like very scary to me, like seriously, genuinely, to like this is just bonkers. Like we left the world of scariness and have just gone to like Cracktown. And I just want to know, like, why could we just not lean into like the scariness of it? Like, why did we have to go to buffoonery way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Buffy, especially season one, Buffy has a tendency to go more the humor route and the goofy route. I think it will always have that tendency to some degree. But I think one of the problems is that everyone agrees, like, puppets are creepy. Puppets are scary. When you see the puppet kind of like turning around and looking at you, moving on its own. Yeah. But once the puppet starts attacking people, that's never just like, that thing's like, 3 foot tall. I could like throw that thing. I could drop kick that across a football field, you know, and be fine. It's not the same thing with like the Child's Play movies. Like Chucky is kind of creepy and scary until you actually see him attacking someone. Like, what? Why can't you just fight this thing off? And so that always, it's hard to do like a killer puppet type thing in a way where you're just not kind of like rolling your eyes, like, you know, come on, you're the Slayer, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like when he starts using the knife and then when Buffy has him like pinned up against the wall, it's like very silly. And this is when they both figure out that they're both mistaken. Cause they're both like, well, you'll never be human. Neither will you. And they're like, wait, what? What are we talking about? What's going on? and it's, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's really funny. So we find out that from Sid that he hunts demons. And the reason that he's a dummy was because there was a demon and there was a curse, and suddenly he turned from human to puppet. And so he thought that Buffy was the demon for obvious reasons of her being very strong and limber and blah, blah, blah. And he says now that the demon has a heart and a brain, he's going to get to keep his human form for another 7 years. So not great. And Sid says that he's killed 6 demons, and if he gets one more demon, the curse will be lifted and he'll be free.
This is like the old Jewish where it's like if you match 3 couples, you go to heaven. If you kill 7 demons, then you get to evolve from a puppet.
Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things about the scene. First of all, just like the looks on all of it, because you don't see Sid as he's telling all of this. The camera just pans across the Scoobies and their looks, which I think their looks are all of our looks the first time that we watch this, going, wait, what? Just like all 4 of them just have these looks of like utter disbelief as this Sid is telling them this big long story. And at the end, Giles is like, well, it's a welcome change to have someone else explain these things. So my question for Sarah is, Sarah, were you able to stay awake while Sid was explaining things when you see those off when Giles explains things?
No. No.
Sarah's just not a lore person is the thing.
No, I'm not a lore person. I think I was more interested when he was like, yeah, I got to like hook up with this like other Slayer in the 30s. She was from Vietnam. I was interested in that because it was like tea, personal, you know? Yeah. That's it. Like, I want to hear like the personal, like, let me know, like, tell me who you slept with 70 years ago. I want to know.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was lore from anyone and not just lore from Giles that was putting you. It wasn't just like Giles' soothing British tones that was putting you to sleep. It's just like lore in general.
No. And oh my God, like that voice like put me out. I don't know how the puppet did it, but I'm all coffee now. I don't know.
So I did look up the guy who did the voice of the puppet. He did like lots of voice work for tons of things over the years. But one of the things that jumped out at me, he did like 56 episodes of voices on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So I thought I should bring that up since I got mentioned earlier.
That's fun.
Boom. I'm telling you, I was like a baby dork. I love
it. Listen, the Power Rangers follow us everywhere because we also talk about Felicity where Julie was a pink Power Ranger.
So. Yeah. Yep. Follow us. Yeah, so now they know that they have to. Okay, so this was like a little convoluted. It's like I didn't quite understand this. Like, we have to go. The guy's like, I'm pretty sure it's part of the talent show. So it's like, we know we have to go to the talent show because he's like, I know that one of the talent show people is the demon. I don't know why he thinks that, but he thinks that. And then he says, whoever's missing from the talent show is the demon. But nobody was missing from the talent show.
Well, because the brain was not viable. A hot tip.
Yeah.
Of course.
So they thought that the demon had gotten what it needed and was like skipping town before it could get killed. But instead, it still needed a brain, so they were still there.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah. So now there's Scout Buffy and the puppet Sid are scouting out from the rafters. Very Phantom of the Opera, but like. I don't know, not even budget, like definitely like dollar store Phantom of the Opera. Cordelia is freaking out because she's too scared to go on stage. Because after all this, like, even though people are dead, even though there's like a demon around, the show must go on. Like, that's the one thing that I know about theater. The show must go on. It, like, we just can't possibly put this whole thing on pause, can we?
No, absolutely not. And yeah, we hear that Sid apparently once knew a Slayer back in the 30s. He says, Korean chick, very hot, which of course is what he says. But we also find out that once, if Sid is able to kill the demon, that by being free, he will be dead. He'll be released.
Which, well, okay, like, so it's like a very little bittersweet, but also like, gosh, like the world needs one less Sid. So maybe it's, maybe it's not that sad, but it's like very bittersweet because he's like, I've lived long enough. Yeah. So like if he basically is saying that like he knows that he's about to die by killing this final demon, but he doesn't care because his body is long gone and he doesn't have a body go to, and he's seen enough of this world. And he's ready. He's ready to move forward.
And he's still a nasty little horn dog at the end of the day. Like, Todd, I had no sympathy for him when then he's like, but if you want to comfort me, honey. And it's like, all right, enough.
This is when you get the backhand and fall off the rafters.
Very much. Yeah. They go way too hard on the horny puppet thing. They go way too hard on that. You know, whenever it's part of the, having him make the little lewd comments occasionally. Yeah. I mean, it's whatever. But like the scene whenever he's like is talking about why he thought Buffy was the demon. It's just so strong, limber, nubile, and his eyes roll up in his head. It was just like, so like, okay, dial it back like 20 notches, not just a notch, like 20 notches. You did not have to go that hard on being a perv. You could like make the little like, you know, lecherous old man comments, but the like the rolling his eyes back in the head, then going, oh, sorry, I'm back. It's like too much. And this here, it's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I feel at this, I think I prefer scary puppet Sid to horny demon slayer Sid. It's just like so weird. So the show's going on, but I don't know. They're trying to figure out, the principal's creeping around more.
Everyone is at the talent show. So they're like, well, where's the demon? And so Buffy jumps down to like talk to Giles, and then Sid is missing. But then when Buffy is looking for Sid, like there's something like dripping on her, and she reaches up and she sees Morgan's brain.
Ew.
And
so she's
just, and it was so nasty looking. And it's just like, and so I love Buffy saying, I'm never going to stop washing my hands. And they're like, well, what the heck is going on? Like, if he got a brain, then why did he like reject it? Like, Morgan was the smartest kid in school. And so Willow, master hacker that she is, Todd, looks into Morgan's files, and it's like, oh yeah, he was taking like college classes. He had straight A's, but he was off for half the year. Like, he has so many sick days. What's going on? And so they look at his nurse file, and his emergency contact is a neurosurgeon. And so they find out, oh, he had brain cancer. And that means his brain is no longer viable.
Yeah. And they realize pretty quickly, oh, yeah, that's the demon rejected it. So we still have a chance to stop it before it fully does what it needs to do. But that also means that someone else is in danger.
Right. And I loved this moment because they're like, okay, well, he wants an intelligent brain, and Willow is known for being like very intelligent, straight A student. And they're like, uh-oh, like Willow is going to be next. And simultaneously, Sarah, this is like another thing where they're like subverting your expectations, where we're all like, oh my gosh, no, Willow. But simultaneously, it's like, uh-oh, Giles is in trouble.
Giles really gets himself into a situation here. And I don't want to say that Giles deserves it, but Giles gets himself like in literally in the guillotine, and that's on him.
I mean, he didn't at that point, though, he wasn't aware that the brain wasn't viable, right? So he didn't know someone was trying to chop off heads. Oh,
girly, that was a real ass guillotine. I don't know if you're supposed to be using something that sharp for your magic tricks, but I really think that he put himself in a bad situation. So, and he gets strapped in by the magician demon, who is starting to like scale up. I guess time's running out for him. He's about to turn back to Uggo. And next thing we know, we
He's about to get like his head chopped off, and the demon's like using the little axe.
And it's Xander that like figures it out, which again, we can give him some credit because they're like, oh, Giles is with everyone. He's probably in trouble. And they're like, no, but he's, and Xander's like, smart.
He really used his thinker on that one. And not only did he figure it out, but he got to catch the rope before he, poor Giles got decapitated. Yeah. So he really does save the day.
Yeah, Xander actually gets to catch it and save Giles. So I was like, wow, Xander's actually like contributing in this episode.
Yeah. It's a big day for Xander.
Yeah, we get some kicky punchy stuff. Buffy is fighting the demon while Willow is taking a hatchet to a lock to try to get Giles out while Xander holds the guillotine up. Simultaneously, like he goes like into the magic box for his trick, and he bursts out as the demon in this like really silly costume.
That was a great trick.
But luckily, Sid shows up just in time, and he's like, "I found you!" And he jumps on the demon and just starts stabbing away, which was so comical,
so goofy looking, so goofy looking.
He just stab. Giles is like, "Wow, you guys are really impressive." This is when Sid comes over and he's like, "Oh, it's not enough." Like, because they decapitate the demon's head, which I was like all about. I was so happy they used the guillotine.
And again, Xander was the one who got to do it. Xander got to cut the thing's head off.
Yeah, he did something for once. And yeah, this really is a win. This is a very good episode for Xander. He really did have a good episode. But I love Sid with the knife like hovering above the demon's body. And he's like, "It's not enough. You've got to get the heart or else he'll come back." And it just looks so ridiculous. I can't. And it's like Buffy offers to do it, but I'm like, no, that's how he escapes this like wooden body. Is he has to be the one to do it, Buffy. You have to let Sid do it.
Well, I guess she was trying to say like, if you're not ready to go, like I can do it. But he was ready. He's seen enough. He's lived a good
and
life.
We've heard enough from him.
Truly. Yeah.
Yeah, Buffy, let him do it. Just let him go.
And this is when, like, the show is a little, even more cheesy in terms of, like, you know, he stabs the demon and then he slumps over and then Buffy picks up his body like, "Oh, poor baby." And it's like, all right.
She was more sad about Sid the puppet than she was about Morgan, an actual human being that was a 17-year-old like genius who it was suffering from brain cancer and migraines. Like, yeah. I can't with like Buffy's like capacity to have feelings towards any like the correct creatures, right? Yeah. Like, come on. Don't be sad for the puppet. He lived a good life. He lived too long, actually. Much too long.
Yeah. It is so funny. And then we even got like a post-credit scene, which is like new for Buffy, Todd. I don't know how often these happen, but
this is the only one, I believe.
Whoa. And we get like a full ass like dramatic telling or acting out of like this Oedipus situation. This was so like hard. It was so cringy. So bad.
It's so funny though. It is so funny. Like I know like cringe sometimes bothers me. This didn't, because it was very short, very sweet. Just Willow running off the stage and Buffy and Xander sliding together to kind of take up her spot there is so great. My big question is like, why did you choose Oedipus Rex as the thing to do a dramatic reading?
It's a dramatic reading.
Yeah, it's very dramatic, but no, it's just of all the things to do a dramatic reading from, Oedipus about like a guy who's like fated to like sleep with his mother and kill his father, you know, just like, yeah, they could have picked something else. And this is definitely Willow definitely picked this. No one else. You know, there could have been like a much better. There could be easier things for them to memorize. I mean, trying to memorize this sort of thing is definitely a lot. So Willow, come on. And then she ran off and abandoned them. bad form, Willow. Mm-hmm. I did love whenever the curtain went up and the whole crowd saw them standing there with like the demon body and everything. And Snyder's like, I don't get it. What is it? Avant-garde?
Yeah. They should have just pretended that was their act, and then they wouldn't have had to do the dramatic reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do they even explain that?
They live on Hellmouth, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they probably don't have to do a lot to explain it, because we've seen before, like after, you know, after the whole thing in the pilot with the vampires, everyone's just like, oh yeah, these people have like really messed up faces. You know, they just like really, you know, they must have been on PCP or something. That people in this town will rationalize anything so that they don't have to admit that there's something supernatural going on. It's like a very, it's a kind of common trope in like running serials like this. It's a reality blindness is a phrase that's used in this comic strip Narbonic, where people like refuse to admit there's anything. If they run into a talking animal, they just won't even hear the animal talking because they refuse to admit that that is happening. So it's kind of that, like people are, when confronted with it, they might accept it in the moment, but as soon as it's done, it's like there's a mist that is like convincing them to like not believe. Mm-hmm. But it's not an actual mist. It's just people's, you know, Giles said like humanity's capacity to delude itself to keep its mind sane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this episode was insane. Like, I will say, like, they did trick me. They got me. I thought Sid was evil. Turns out he's still evil because he's gross, but not as evil as I thought. He's not a demon. But I don't know. I mean, certainly one of the wilder episodes of season one, I'd say, Sarah.
Yeah. I think I have like a tolerate it hate relationship with this episode. So
yeah, it's fair.
I don't know like if this is gonna be my like least favorite episode of all time. Like, this is not a Who's Afraid of Corey Wolf situation, but
I would treat that, to me, this is better than The Pack, because The Pack was just so bad.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Really, but like, I would assume that this is a lower half, or a lower three quarter, or not three quarter, lower third episode for the season, and probably overall. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I looked up a couple like lists there online of like ranking all the Buffy episodes. It's definitely towards the bottom, which is completely fair. I think there's some really fun stuff in it. I think a lot of like the stuff between the Scoobies is really good. It's just the plot with Sid just goes way too hard in the gross puppet stuff, and then it's a little goofy at times. So yeah, I think it's completely fair that this is ranked low, but I enjoy it. There are other episodes that I really don't enjoy later on for different reasons, but this one, it's dumb fun. And so I can appreciate it for being dumb fun.
Yeah. Well, we did get a piece of feedback from Justin. He says he has some questions. He's been wondering what our first take on Miss Calendar, like where do we think she's going to go as a character? She wasn't in this episode. I still think there's like chemistry between her and Giles, so
yeah, I have
a feeling she could be like a tech consultant for the Scoobies, you know, like she knows IT. I feel like she'd be a natural mentor for Willow, although it seems like Giles is really taking that role. So what do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, I can see some vibes as well. I still think that she was sent here for a reason. I don't know quite what that reason is, but I think that like she didn't show up here as a coincidence, quite like Giles. And I think that, I mean, I really liked her. I think that she's like pretty like a cool teacher. She's interesting. I still am very curious what a techno sage, what was it?
Techno pagan
actually does and means, besides just being good at that technology and that that web and surfing the net. But I'm really curious. I'm really excited to see what comes of it.
Justin also said, I also couldn't help but notice your talk about rent in Sunnydale. I've been wondering, which city do you think rent would be cheaper in? Sunnydale or Gotham City? It could be tough when you think about it. Sunnydale living on Hellmouth, you deal with a ton of bodies due to all the vampires, demons, and everything else that calls it home, whereas Gotham has all the criminals. Todd, you're probably a perfect person to have on the podcast to talk about this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Gotham is probably, because there's lots of, I think people are much more aware of the crime in Gotham. Like we already talked about, yes, in Sunnydale, people are ignored. Even if like the crime rates are huge, like people, no one talks about it. Or very rarely talks about, like, Snyder actually
is sunny, so like, yeah, people, you know, Gotham City, I feel like, always looks very dark.
Oh yeah, Gotham is kind of always gloomy. There's like not just like super villain crime, there's just like regular crime. It's just awful. And especially as you get on, like, Gotham undergoes like horrible earthquakes and plague, and it gets, there's actually a storyline called No Man's Land where Gotham is actually like cordoned off from the rest of the world because it's been through so much stuff.
Oh my
that
gosh.
The rest of the state, United States, is like, yeah, we don't want you. Just like, you know, deal with your own crap type thing. Yeah. So I think Gotham is probably like a much lower cost of living there. I think property's probably cheaper. Although I don't know, you got Bruce Wayne there. Owning half the city.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, because for all the villains and like evil people you have, you also have known heroes, you know what I mean? Versus in Hellmouth, it's, I guess, some of the stuff that happens is a little more under the radar, but so are the heroes. Like, you can't easily identify a hero.
But I think whenever people get killed by the Joker, everyone knows people are getting killed by the Joker. So that's, I think, fair. It's like, yeah, much more, because he will publicize and get on TV and broadcast all that stuff. So yeah. I think Gotham is probably the one that it's a lot harder to convince people to move to Gotham or stay in Gotham probably than Sunnydale.
Yeah, rent's going to be real cheap there. Also, Justin says, without spoiling anything, I think Sarah is going to start looking at Giles in a different light pretty soon.
Look at this. Okay. I'm saying
the Miss Calendar relationship could be a reason why. If that
Giles has Riz, so I'm sure. Yeah, I got the Riz.
Glad you're enjoying the series so far. Just keep an eye on Sarah around all those vampires. Hope you're all 5x5. On the last episode, I don't remember that.
No, that is a reference that will make sense later on.
Oh, okay. I didn't miss anything then. Good.
No.
Am I susceptible to being lured by a vampire? Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Really? Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could have just asked, "Am I susceptible?" And I would have said
You don't even have to say half the fucking sentence. Yeah. Okay.
No qualifiers needed, but I think you're ready to turn on the Scoobies in favor of Daddy Vamps and Darla. So I think that kind of answers the question.
Well, I mean, yeah, like I am on their side, to be honest with you. I do miss them when they're not around, all the vampires. And I'm very curious. Like, I mean, he has to have more followers somewhere. Maybe he has to import some from like another country. He has to like call up his cousin. And he's like, "Hey, cuz, like, all of my followers are dead. Can I borrow some of yours, please?" And then they come in the bus with the vampire bus driver. Remember?
Maybe that's why I haven't seen him. He's like on the phone constantly right now, the last couple of weeks, trying to like call and get his like new followers in.
Yeah, he has like the old Rolodex, and he has like just like go through it and be like, he's like got to go through the W's. "Oh, hey, William, just like remember me like from the college days?" "Yeah, I loved killing all those fucks with you. Do you want to come and like, you know,
check out my blood jacuzzi?"
"I just got it serviced."
"Also, we have the anointed one, so that's pretty exciting."
I think the anointed one might be once they meet the anointed one, they might not want to stick around, but
I mean, yeah, that kid's a brat, but
yeah,
you know what they say, once a frat bro, always a frat bro. So William's got to come.
Sarah, are you ready to hear what next week's episode title is?
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous because this one was so scary and the next one is called Nightmares. So does that mean that one's also going to be really scary?
I'm gonna be screaming everywhere. Is this like a Nightmare Interceptor? Like a, you know, remember back in the day, they're like, oh, like the Sandman makes you go to sleep. Well,
yes,
that's scary. Like, I don't want some dude in like a long like dress, sleeping dress, and like a little hat with a ball on the end come around with a bag of sand to put me to sleep. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that, I think that's what's gonna happen.
Oh, you think the evil person's gonna be like the Sandman?
Yeah, I don't trust that fucking Sandman. Fuck him.
That's fair. Yeah. Ugh. Just stop attacking people while they're sleeping, okay? It's not nice. It's not nice. We'll see. I don't know. So that's next week's episode, season one, episode 10, Nightmares. We'll cover next week. In the meantime, Todd, where can people find you? What else do you have going on if they want to hear what you got? What's up? What podcast you got going on?
What's up? Yeah, so you can find me. You can find me on most social media platforms at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian was too many characters. And you can find me every week over on One Indescribable Podcast, where Adam H, TV, Lindy, and I are going through different TV shows. Right now, we're in the midst of going through Girls 5 Eva. We just wrapped up our coverage of season two, just in time for season three to drop in a couple of weeks on Netflix. Very excited to actually be covering a show while it's kind of relevant, although Netflix will drop it all at once probably, and then we will just talk about it for the next 8 weeks. But still, we'll get to talk about the first episode not too long after it drops, which never happens with us. But also on top of that, we are doing Previous Little Liars, where we are going through every episode of Pretty Little Liars, but only watching the previously ons. And I'm the only one of the group who's actually seen season one of Pretty Little Liars. So I get to lead them through and try to help them keep straight what people's names are and what they've seen before and haven't. And it is a real roller coaster at times. Especially my favorite thing hosting it is because Sarah's partner is one of the people on that. And so she will be listening to his side of the conversation from the other room of the record. And I will just get the most amazing, you know, messages on Discord from her going, come on, I can't believe they, and the one time they finally cracked something. That was
they cracked something. Okay, this is the newest thing. Fucking poison glasses. Poison glasses. I literally cannot deal.
Yeah. Adam That's said that, and I instantly got a message from Sarah going, poison glasses.
Poison glasses. Yeah. That's how Jenna Marshall got blind, by poison glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Who knew?
Sounds normal to me.
Yep.
That podcast is unhinged in like the best way. So definitely give it a listen. Meanwhile, over here, of course, we're covering Buffy, which drops every Thursday. Felicity drops every Monday. We're getting towards the end of season one of Buffy, which is pretty exciting. Yeah,
three episodes left.
I can't believe it.
Gone by fast.
And yeah, in case you missed it, I've launched Talkin' Shit with my friend Stuart. We have our trailer out. We're going to be covering the pilot of Schitt's Creek coming up this week. So certainly tune into that. Make sure you follow us at Talkin' Shit. That's don't have a G on the talking and you're good. And yeah, find us, follow along, subscribe. It's going to be a ton of fun. I really can't wait. Those are going to be similar to Todd, how you all are structuring Previous Little Liars. They're meant to be bite-sized morsel podcasts. So we're looking at like a 45-minute podcast top. So something just for your little daily commute. Hopefully if your commute's not too long. If it's longer than 45 minutes, I'm sorry.
In my day when I commuted to New York City, that would only last maybe a half of a ride, Jessica. That's
brutal. Sorry. Yep. So check that out. You can find me at The Just Sterling. Sarah's at Sarah Ferguson. We're at Shit 90s Pod. Sarah, anything else you can think of that we've got going on?
No. I mean, like, everyone's cooking up something.
Yeah. So. Lots of stuff on the horizon. So
keep
your eyes on our social media for some more announcements in the future. But we will talk to you all next time. Have a good one. Here endeth the lesson.
Just ask. Shit 90 shows taught me.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.